Hi, Monk Podcast listeners. The following is a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the full-length edition of this episode and all of our regular Monk Members Only podcasts, go to our website, www.monkdebates.com, and register for membership. Membership is free, and it's available for you right now at www.monkdebates.com. Hope you enjoy the program. Hello, Monk members. Rudyard Griffiths here, your host and moderator. Welcome to this, our weekly Monk Members Only podcast. This is the half-hour program where we dig into the big issues and ideas in the news the past week, provide you, hopefully, with some new analysis and insights. As our guide, every week, we turn to Janice Gross Stein. She's the founding director of the Monk School of Global Affairs, an internationally acclaimed author and scholar, and she's all ours for the next half hour. Janice, great to be in dialogue with you today.
Great to be here with you, Rudyard, and of course, a day after Canada Day that was like no other we've had in this country.
Well, that's where I want to begin on this kind of post-Canada Day Friday edition of the Monk Members podcast. Talk about the year that was. Normally we do that around January 1st, the real new year, but this has been an important year from Canada, maybe one of the most important ones in my lifetime. You might share that view too. What do you reflect on after 12 months of the most kind of intense period of this pandemic pressing down on our country? What do we learn? What do we take away from this experience?
Rudyard, if we look back at the whole year, the huge story was the pandemic and how Canadians across this country had their lives literally shut down and changed as a result of it. When I look back at the year, I am struck by how much we are 12 countries and three territories, but we are not a country in the way that we normally think about it, because the provinces so shaped the way their residents experienced this pandemic. The variation among the provinces, so huge and an almost impossible problem for the federal government to coordinate, because health is a matter of provincial jurisdiction. And repeatedly, I asked myself over and over and over, are we a country or are we a federation of 15 provinces and territories that have a flag and a parliament and a prime minister? But that's about it, frankly.
Great insight. I agree with that, Janice. You know, a couple of things that shocked me the last year was border controls. We had provinces impeding your, you know, charter rights, your fundamental rights of freedom of mobility on the basis of, you know, their determination of what public health controls they wanted in place. And really, not a word from the federal government on this. It does remind you that, you know, while our federal system helps Canada in many ways, because we do have these strong regional identities and we all have to kind of figure out a way to live together, when these bigger crises come along, I think the question we have to ask ourselves, and there's some research to back this up, is does federalism kill? Is federalism a net negative in a 21st century of bigger global challenges, from climate to geopolitics to pandemics, that are pressing down on nation states? And are federations just more brittle, less capable of rising to those challenges? What do you think of that argument?
I think there's a really important point there for Canadians to think hard about as we move forward, Rudyard, because the pandemic, believe it or not, was, relatively speaking, far from the worst pandemic that we could have had. But it does give us a chance to think about next time. And the next time may not only be a pandemic, climate change. You know, look at the intense heat that Western Canada and Northwestern United States are going through, whether it's climate change or not. We have a lot more of it than we had a decade ago. any kind of natural disaster, so much of it is locally driven, locally determined. And that can be a strength, but it's not a strength when Nova Scotia puts up border controls that locks out New Brunswickers, which is what happened. Never mind all of Atlantic Canada being off limits to the rest of us, although it worked for Atlantic Canada. So border controls, buying vaccines out in the global market, buying PPE, that, you know, you need a national government to do that. Provinces don't go out into the global market to buy the stuff that we need to manage a crisis. But it's a tough job for the federal government to buy everything and then say, okay, Roger, Premier of Kensington Street, this is for you to distribute and you do it any way you want. And all I'll do is listen to you complain and whine about how I didn't get it done in a timely way, which is what the premiers did, frankly, all year long in this country. I don't think our structure was well designed to get us through this.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some of the other big issues this year, obviously, that I've thought about is mental illness and the extent to which the incredible isolation that so many people experience, especially what I hear from families with teens, younger children who are denied, in some cases, in provinces such as Ontario, really months without socialization and the education experience of their peers. I think that's going to be a major legacy. On a positive note, though, because we should talk about positive things too, I was really heartwarmed in the last week to see the number of new small businesses that Canadians have created during the last year. There is a certain resiliency, yeah, a kind of entrepreneurial drive that kicks in a moment of adversity. So it's not that the cup is half empty, but maybe it's not half full either.
You know, that's a very important story, the local response. The local response, you know, the closer to the ground you were, Rudyard, the better you did. And you see this with the small businesses. Believe it or not, this is an astonishing story. More restaurants opened across this country than closed during the pandemic. They adapted on a dime. They delivered takeout food. They moved online. Yeah, they lost money, many of them, and they're going to have to dig themselves out of a big hole. But the adaptability and the flexibility and the entrepreneurship that, you know, was across Canada as vulnerable sectors adapted was really impressive. We also have to talk, Rudyard, about shocking revelations that came of unmarked graves, largely of we don't know yet because the forensics are not done, but clearly these graves are all adjacent to residential schools across this country. I think it was a moment of truth for Canadians. We knew about abuse. We knew about really cruel and inhuman treatment meted out to kids. But I don't think there's a parent across this country who, when they heard that story that is breaking right now, didn't shudder and stop for a second and think, oh my God, right? These could be children that died prematurely as a result of the treatment they received.
Or lack of tuberculosis and other diseases that were kind of ravaging both Indigenous and non-Indigenous populations. But I agree, there's something about the horror of it, of just thinking about these young children ill, dying, removed from their parents, and then being buried in these unmarked graves, you know, really, in a sense, what a powerful expression of their lack of worth to that society and to those institutions. So a real reckoning. We just celebrated Canada Day, and I guess, you know, I'm fully in support of a renewed focus on reconciliation. Yeah. What I regret a bit about is the subsequent conversation we've had around statues and, you know, canceling Canada Day, and what I feel is a kind of a knee-jerk reaction. You know, I get it. It's an emotional moment. People kind of punching back and punching at national institutions and symbols. I just had a weird experience, though. Maybe you shared it too. This Canada Day, I felt a bit like what maybe many Americans feel like. I felt the word Canada Day and supporting Canada Day had suddenly become a political act in a way that it had never been in this country in any previous, you know, July 1st. And it to me, that had a kind of an American feel to it. Suddenly, if I said I was pro-Canada Day, I was taking a political position in the same way that Americans, you know, say, yeah, rah, rah, USA, you know, we all know those chants at the Trump rallies. Yeah. So it was just, I don't know, is it just me, Janice, or is it kind of...
No, I think you're
something
absolutely...
Something going on here.
I think there is something going on here, and I think you're absolutely right that Canada Day was really a nonpartisan kind of happy day party, and you had CBC and local bands and mm-hmm. local parades and barbecues, and it was a day off from everything. That's really what it was. It was a day off from everything that would divide Canadians on a normal day, but you didn't do that on Canada Day. And there's no question this Canada Day was politicized. And that was unavoidable given, frankly, the horror of what became so real, so personal to so many Canadians across the country. What was avoidable is this argument about whether you cancel it or not. I don't believe that Indigenous communities want it canceled. They want it as an opportunity to remember, to acknowledge, for the rest of the country to think hard about what happened in our history. And frankly, in my lifetime, Rudyard, there were residential schools. Mm-hmm. And yet I grew up in this country, studied Canadian history in high school and university, was never taught about them, didn't know about them. So actually canceling it defeats the whole purpose. And I think that's the problem. Anytime people talk about canceling something, or we give up the opportunity to learn anew, to think anew, and to reinvent it. So people who held candlelight vigils, frankly, were not canceling Canada Day. Mm-hmm. They were saying, we're adding here. There's a piece that you haven't paid attention to. That's got to be part of what we do on Canada Day. Mm-hmm. And it is a really important moment that we move beyond canceling. And we think about, what does reconciliation mean, Richard? It doesn't mean canceling. Mm-hmm. It can't mean canceling. It's got to mean, how do we build this in as part of our history? What changes in our high school curriculums mm-hmm. as a result of what we've learned this year?
Yeah. I mean, my final point in that is I endorse that, and I wish we'd extend that same sensibility to our discussion of, you know, statues, because we know that in the last couple of weeks, the statue of Egerton Ryerson was torn down in Toronto on Ryerson University campus. And right beside that statue, they had erected a plaque, I thought quite sensibly, talking about his early involvement pre the residential school system as it was known, as it was established late in the 19th century. But he had been a early proponent of agricultural instruction for Aboriginal tribes and communities that he worked with, that he had learned their language, that they had given him an honorific of a legendary chief in their community near what is present-day Burlington. Anyway, all that history lost, statue torn down, it's this bizarre erasure of the past, as if that's somehow going to make things better. You've been listening to a sample of the Monk Members Only podcast. To access the rest of the episode, consider becoming a member. Membership is free and available at www.monkdebates.com. Once you've joined as a member, go to your membership profile to access the rest of this episode and all of our Monk Members podcasts. Thanks for listening.